You know, sometimes in an American movie, you know, someone has a bit of love for the movies, and you see it. But overall, the movie, you know, like Forbidden Kingdom, the opening credits for that movie of the Hong Kong movie posters sort of coming to life and moving around.
Lovely.
I was lovely. I was like, I'm ready for this. I bring on this film, and then aside from one or two moments where the I guess fanboy reaction to seeing Jackie Chan and Jet Li actually working together, and you say, "Wow, this is I've actually never seen this." Yeah. It falls flat, but again, there's moments where you feel like someone who cares had a hand in doing at least something in this movie.
Yeah, it's easy to see what that movie intended. I thought it was uneven overall, not memorable, but I can certainly see what they were doing there. And as Mike Leader told us on the show here, that that movie was never meant to please the Hong Kong fanboys solely. You know, it's an American-made movie, so it's easy to see what they were aiming for.
Well, I think the overall idea was to try and bring all of Hong Kong movie folklore and Chinese folklore together into one kids movie for American children.
Yeah.
And I guess it's successful in its own small way on a small level. I don't think it really set American kids' hearts afire with love for Bride with White Hair lore or anything like that. But it's an attempt, I guess. You can't fault an attempt.
Exactly. Yeah, it's made by Taiwan's premium nutter, Chu Yinping, and I haven't seen that movie, but I love Chu Yinping's. I love Island of Fire. That's a good movie, to be honest.
Island of Fire has so many. It steals from so many other movies.
Really?
it's actually fascinating to watch. Like, wow, it's like rewatching this bizarre Sammo Hung version of. Paul Newman.
Cool Hand Luke, I think.
Cool Hand Luke, yeah. It's like, I can't believe how much of Cool Hand Luke is in this favor movie they had to make to get Jackie out of it. It's worth watching.
That's a sign of Chu Yinping being a movie fan, because he's done that in a lot of movies, copied movies beat by beat, but I take that as pure sincerity.
It's sincerity, and he picks only the best things to copy. And that's a very important thing to say. He has a great taste for what to rip off, which I think is great. And, Fantasy Mission Force, I just love it. It's in that same Golden Queen Commandos style of anything goes. There could be a ghost. There could be a Nazi. They could drive up in a 70s Pinto. There could be
Jackie's role in this? Is he part of that nothingness? Is he doing some really messed up stuff, like eating poo or something?
He pops in trying to catch a chicken. I mean, you just got to strap in and go along for the ride in that movie. It's got the best Seven Samurai, like amassing of a group of people for, men on a mission. They just they have this board meeting with all these military types in every conceivable military uniform world, from every corner of the world, with their handlebar mustaches in, like Bavarian helmets, etc. Where they decide, they're wondering who they should get for this mission, Whatever mission, I don't even know what the mission is. It's a mission. and they go through a slideshow where they show Roger a painting of Roger Moore as James Bond, and they say, well, he's busy. And then Karl Macke, the bald detective, he's not available. Then a picture of Stallone as Rocky, the Rocky II poster picture of Stallone. Yeah. Rocky, this is a military operation. He's not suitable. Brigitte Lin as her Golden Queen Commando character. But then there's a hard cut to, Jimmy Wang Yu riding on a Jeep with a Gatling gun, mowing down hundreds of people. It just takes off from there of pure insane silliness and love of spaghetti westerns, Pink Panther movies, James Bond movies. you know,
God,
all the things.
God,
that...
how people still hate that movie. Like the hardcore Jackie Chan fans, they just, it seems like it's too much for them.
Because it's way too much.
That Taiwan nothingness, that is something else.
I think you have to also share in the same level of sheer joy of, you know, a Morricone Western score matched with a King Hu fight matched with, you know, this mashup of all these genres that I love yeah. into one just sandbox full of dumb comedy. And I love brilliant gags in movies.
Yeah.
And that's why I think I really love Hong Kong movies at their core, is because they create gags and situations, and they understand how to go through the mechanics of them for an audience to enjoy.
Yes.
And that, there are so many little creative gags. Like somebody said, you know, let's have this. Like, you know, it's just, I just love that.
It's a period of Taiwan cinema that I'm so sad that it went away, and in favor of when Taiwan came. You know, I'm not complaining Ang Lee came onto the scene, but after there's a break there when Taiwan went from this nothingness and even exploitation period to something completely different, basically art house. And you never really saw that again in Taiwan cinema.
Yeah. I love a Hu Hsiao-sen, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, yeah. You know, like a movie like The Puppet Master, but I don't love it as much as I love Golden Queen Commandos. You know what I'm saying?
you can't complain when you have a recreation of the scene from My Name Is Nobody, where they are shooting down the guys from the horses, shot in slow motion. That's just a wonderfully copied scene, and it takes effort to do that. That's dangerous stuff.
I think it's just, if you put a Morricone score over anything, and it's pretty good.
Yeah,
I'm like, true. You know, I just saw Kick-Ass, and there's a moment where all of a sudden the score is from For a Few Dollars More, and my excitement level at watching the scene just, you know, edges up like, you know, 20-fold, because I'm like, man, that just fits perfectly for any sort of underestimated people on a mission type of scenes.
Right.
Just put a Morricone song on it, and it's gold.
So I mean, there are fans of that movie that people hate. There should be more fans, really. So it was not a bad deal that Jackie got to appear in Fantasy Mission Force and briefly on Island of Fire. That is not such a good movie in its cut Hong Kong version, around about 90 minutes. It's an excellent movie at the original two-hour length. That's how it played in Taiwan. There's loads of good dramatic scenes cut out for
the
Hong
cast
Kong
is. The cast is like the dream cast. For, yeah. So, you know, it's so, got Tony Leung, and it's just
and
great.
And also like the Taiwan veterans. Tok Chung Wai is this great mm-hmm. Taiwan veteran. He plays like Tony Leung, Gafai's cellmate, the guy with the rat. Mm-hmm. And he has loads more scenes.
That's not an original idea, guy with the rat in prison.
No, of course not.
But you know, everything's the amount of references to actual great cinema that maybe isn't remembered so well anymore. It makes these movies really special to me.
And that movie that we'll discuss later on in like part three, that movie Island of Fire is one of those rare instances where you have a gritty Jackie movie. Again, because there's no comedy in that movie, not from Jackie anyway. And
his scenes, I would say that he's not the strength of that movie.
No, not really. It's Sammo,
no,
really.
But, yeah, Sammo's great, and you know, it's got a great cast. It's not, I mean, it's of course a quickie. I understand why people would say and dismiss it, but at the same time, I have such a love for that genre, and they're at least the people that are exploiting, they're exploiting out of a love for something.
Oh yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It's not yeah. they're just. It's not the usual Bruceploitation where they say, "Let's throw a guy in front of a camera," and you know, no one cares. They're referencing movies that you have to be a cinema lover to reference.
Mm,
so
exactly.
There's an extra bit of enjoyment in it for me to watch. Yeah. You know? And it feels it, I had mentioned to you before, when I saw it in the theater, the print that I saw, whenever a new character comes on screen, the movie puts a credit for them.
Yeah.
Almost like, you know, theatrical, like, and ladies and gentlemen, Yun Biao.
Yeah.
You know, there's, it's pretentious, but in a, it's in a, such an excited, I have free reign. I am so excited about having, you know, Shekin in my movie. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, I'm Jackie Chan, this guy, this kid who grew up in the Peking Opera School, but look, I have all these stars in my movie. And it has such a, an excitement level throughout the movie. Mm. Not just, but the it seemed to me that this theatrical print I saw where they actually put these credits on, it seemed perfect.
Yeah.
Because that's what the movie feels like, where he's just excited about having something that's his own, that, and it's excessive and the scenes are overlong, but they're done with so much excitement and a kid in a candy store level of love for what he's doing that it just, it's just charming.
And of course it is an old convention, as a matter of fact, but I like it when it's in movies, when you have intro shots. In the 14 Amazons, the Shaw Brothers movie, you have this whole sequence where they just bundle together all the 14 Amazons and do like a 10-minute sequence where everybody has to have an introductory shot.
Yeah, or the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly has the, I would say, the greatest of all time, the freeze frames. And Eli Wallach's entrance in that movie, I think, might be the best entrance by anybody in ever in a movie, where he comes bursting through a plate glass window with a gun and a chicken leg. And there's a freeze frame, and it says, you know, the ugly. Much like the joy of watching a Hong Kong movie, it is Eli Wallach himself bursting through that plate glass window. So, you know, yeah, it's just a technique that that is based on just this. I mean, it's not hubris. It's more a level of confidence and love for what you're doing, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You are being theatrical. You know that you're making something that's art, that's not real. It's got a fairy tale quality. It's like a stage performance.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, silent movies. That was the way that a lot of silent movies were, you know, Buster Keaton would be there, and then, you know, his co-star would come out, and she'd, under her first title dialogue card, they'd introduce the person who was speaking it.
Yeah.
As a credit. And so it seems a lot like that, where he's calling back an old style of movies that maybe not because he's trying to bring a callback, maybe he just thinks that's the way it should be, because he's a filmmaker now, you know.
Because it wasn't like a set rule that you, as a viewer, would expect with certain movies, because it kind of came and went, this technique. I mean, The Longer the 80s ran, of course, you didn't see it, you barely saw it. I only remember two examples: The Seventh Curse, the giant fat Chin Si-ho movie, that has credits on screen. And even like in The Big Score, which is this crazy Wong Jing movie, very violent and wacky movie, that has that technique.
Yeah,
and that was 1990, so you wonder, what the hell? Okay, yeah, well, I'll take it.
It's something that's awesome, and it completely fits that movie, because it is, you know, for Hong Kong movies then, an all-star cast, and some of them are earlier. Like, you know, I don't know how many people worldwide were thrilled to see introducing Yun Biao credit, but. You know, it was for Jackie Chan then, like a dream cast. You know, he had you know, Wong and Sik and Shek Kin in his movie. You know, So it's fun to see him, his level of innocent excitement about making a great movie. It was, you know, it was insightful. I asked him. I said, you know, even back then, I said, can you make another Project A movie, please, with Sammo and Yun Biao? That's, and he was like, yes. But, you know, 16 years later, I'm still waiting. But I would love to see another movie with those three, especially in that Project A vein, where, you know, if you picked up from where Project A 2 left off, maybe it would be probably World War II era. 15 years after that, you know, and that would fit in nicely. Those three guys having a movie like that would be probably my dream for them, for what I'd like to see out of those guys.
Yeah, you certainly hear that a lot about fan request, if you will, to get the brothers together again is a dream for many, and who could blame them? Who can blame them? They had chemistry and then some.
Yeah, they're super talented guys. With Dragons Forever, Yuen Biao's oddball character with his goldfish swimming around the apartment through a tube character is it's just awesome. It's just the guy's compelling. He's just a great presence on screen and can play, that sort of, hard to play offbeat kook ball on screen,
And they certainly are, the trio are now finally getting roles in bigger budgeted projects and more noticeable projects. Sammo now working on the Ip Man movies, off screen and on screen, and Yuen Biao is actually in the Herman Yao directed Young Ip Man, coming out as well. Sammo is in that as well. So I saw Yuen Biao in another Herman Yao movie, Turning Point, Laughing Gore, where he played a police officer, and he has a really great scene with Anthony Wong. Yuen Biao is in a hospital, and he has this dialogue scene with Anthony Wong, very subtle and very, just two great veterans going at it, and it shows that the growth and they develop that acting skill over the years. They just do.
Yeah, I've had people like Rick Meyer online. When I lament the fact that Sammo isn't appreciated enough, mentioned to me that he's kind of sabotaged his own career in a way. But to me, maybe if he's acting out or frustrated at not being appreciated, and maybe his sabotaging his career is based on a legitimate frustration. I don't know. I think that Sammo is the most talented of the choreographers. His style is street fighting, tough style. Mm-hmm. Would be the best translation to a modern film, rather than the wirework type of style.
Yeah.
And it's woefully been ignored. I think that his style of filmmaking and choreography and his sense of comedy would be an asset to any Hollywood production, and he certainly should be working on a level that is much higher than he has been over the last 10 years.
Right. Well, Ip Man movies are still, it brings back the period martial arts movie in a bigger way as well. So, you never know what's going to happen. Yeah. After that, because they are getting international distribution as well, so that is coming back. Certainly, it's not just that type of movie every 5 years now. They're coming out in droves almost compared to the last 10 years. If you know.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say about myself is after 1997, I kind of had my heart broken with Hong Kong movies and what they were putting out. So the modern stuff, I can't be as I just don't have the love for it that I have for pre-handover stuff, because it was like I just experiencing it at the time, and I was very deeply into this stuff. I was meeting Jackie Chan, and I was contacting people all over the world. And I will tease this: I have a full frontal nude photo of Jackie Chan that he sent to me. And I will give the details of that. I've been holding on to it for years with wondering how is that going to... But,
Saw in the head scene from Big Boss or the nude shot of Jackie Chan. I just can't decide.
No, I'll tell you what it is. Was it my birthday? I had contacted Jackie Chan's offices way back when. And they had... And I actually joined the fan club, which I think they were outside of Japan and Hong Kong, there were 20 members, I think. And I was one of, I became one of them. So they would send me red packets at New Year's time and things like that.
Yeah.
Stickers from movies and stuff. It was awesome. you know, back then when his office was small and they did stuff like that and things were signed by hand, you know. Mm-hmm. But one day I get in my mailbox a photo of a baby Jackie Chan, full nude, black and white. It's a Christmas card, or was it a birthday card that I got? I think it was a Christmas card. And around his penis, it says, "So small then, so big now."
Yeah.
And I got this in the mail.
Speaking of cocky.
Can you imagine? I mean, from my point of view, this was the best thing that ever happened, right? I was just, I couldn't
believe it. Thank God you opened it to no one else.
On the inside, it was a picture of him getting his honorary degree from Hong Kong University, which was a moment of pride that I don't think could possibly be equaled in his lifetime, that he was getting like an actual degree in something.
Yeah.
And his shining pride of this. And, you know, it was like, you know, happy Christmas or whatever. Yeah. But can you imagine? So I don't know. I mean, I got to scan it and, like, tease it, like, you know, full frontal nudity Jackie Chan. I have it. Coming soon. Posting soon.
Collectors, rare stuff here. You can sell it, like, for a while.
Let me tell you about the day that Jackie Chan personally sent me a nude photo of it. And then in the early 90s, the sheer volume of the best movies I'd ever seen in my life coming at me, I graduated from college in 1990, you know. I was, you know, it was a little jading because a lot of the film world, besides the Hong Kong movies I liked, but we're still following the same kind of formula. There was the new wave hadn't really kicked in. So it was like, you know, you maybe a little jaded about movies coming out of college, like seen that, done that.
Yeah.
And then for the next 7 years, completely immersed in the best movies I'd ever seen, you know, just like, and being able to go, I was living in D.C., and I would be able to go to the Biograph Theater would have festivals, and you could pay $50 for a pass for the year. Wow. And I would go in. I would get there at 11 o'clock in the morning, you know, I would get something to eat, go in with, you know, like a picnic lunch for myself, and emerge 12 hours later, you know, and I have seen in a row, like, you know, I remember one festival I saw Hard Boiled, Fist of Legend, Green Snake, Dragon Inn. I mean, all in one day.
Jesus.
Shanghai Blues. Peking Opera Blues.
Oh, fuck. Did you see Shanghai Blues on the big screen?
I saw it 6 times.
Shit. That's a rare experience, first of all, and an experience.
It was so fucking amazing. And then, you know, the Smithsonian at the same time, because it was just, you know, the art world, this was, people wanted to program this stuff. And even, like, you know, I think I mentioned to you before, like, gay and lesbian festivals would have Peking Opera Blues playing.
Oh.
Yeah, and yeah, like, things like that. And I, you know, and it was just, it was like heaven for a genre film fan.
Yeah.
And there were a few of us who did a lot of campaigning with people, like, this is the best stuff ever. Mm-hmm. You know, Jackie Chan should be a household name worldwide.
Yeah.
You know, and it slowly started to happen. In fact, that night that we met Jackie Chan, he was going to be doing David Letterman, which
for,
was another...
For Supercop or for Rumble?
For Rumble.
Right.
For Rumble in the Bronx, right? So he was like, I'm going on this David Letterman. And we were like, oh, my God, you know? And he's like, oh, really? And we were like, yeah. And he's like, what should I do? And we said, kick his ass. And so he went on the show and he said, I met these people. And, of course, he says, you know, 700 people. He says it's on the air. And they tell me, kick your ass. Right? So it was like, wow, that's really awesome. But then I got to tell you this. He did a thing. Have you ever seen this clip where it was the first time he was on an American show? What was on Letterman?
Maybe not that. I think I've seen the Super Cop one because he did some martial arts demonstration, but that might have been his second appearance.
I think that's the where he breaks the bottles.
Yes.
That was the one. That was for Rumble.
Right, okay.
That wasn't for Super Cop. That was this one.
Right, okay.
And so he did that martial arts thing where he did the spinning on top of the desk and breaking the bottles. And then, obviously, unrehearsed, he landed in Dave's chair. He hasn't been on Letterman's show since. You could tell Dave was pissed. It was amazing. It's like, yeah, you could see that Letterman was like, who the fuck is this guy sitting in my chair? Like, and he's like, you know, get out of there. And he wasn't joking. Like, it was like, you know, it really touched that, you know, Johnny Carson's desk possessive nerve with Letterman. And Jack, he's never been on again. He's only been on Conan and Leno in America.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was on, you know, he was on a morning show here that was wonderful with the guy that hosts that crappy Dancing with the Stars had a morning show in the early 90s. It was a great morning show, actually. But he had Jackie on, and they had a foot race over props throughout the studio. Wonderful stuff. And then I remember he was on an MTV thing where they interviewed him, and they said, you know, can you teach us how to, you know, some martial arts move for a fight? He says, yes, okay, come at you, kick at the knee, then run away. And they're like, he demonstrates this very, very, very wonderfully, like, you know, just kick and cowardly run away. And it was one of the, it was so wonderful. And then he did the Macarena. Yeah, who dated it wonderfully.